Hello, it is Thursday, July 8th, and another Come On Now MMA podcast. Like I said yesterday, I did not get everything covered that I wanted to. I'm going to probably get everything covered today, but still I will probably have something delivered on Saturday morning, probably related to some questions for Dana White, some reaction to the weigh-in and the press conference that's on Thursday night, and just various little things that popped off before what we're expecting to be the biggest event of the UFC year, UFC 264. And speaking of UFC 264, one of the fighters in the main event, Conor McGregor, who faces Dustin Poirier, thinks that he's going to beat Poirier and then move on to a lightweight title fight with Charles Oliveira, who holds the belt right now. And no comment on the expectation that he's going to win. Of course he's going to say that. I mean, no one will say that they think they're going to, you know, I'm going to give it my best and probably lose. You're not going to hear that. So nothing to really say about that. But what here is something that I don't know if this is common to combat sports athletes or athletes in general, or people just don't remember or care to remember correctly of what happened, but in the films that they compare themselves to. So we've always had the I'm like Rocky kind of thing, and people always forget that in the first Rocky movie he lost, and I mean, just what happened? He lost. So the comparisons to Rocky have always left me a little cold, and so now Conor McGregor has upped it a little bit. And here he is speaking about where he thinks the lightweight title fight between him and Charles Oliveira will take place, when, and throwing in a little movie note and getting it wrong. And here's the quote. I feel maybe Christmas time, December, I don't know. We'll talk afterward, but that world title will be contested in the Allegiant Stadium here in Las Vegas. I would imagine so. I like the look of it. It's called a Death Star as well. And that's what I'm feeling like right now, a Death Star. And so does McGregor not remember what happened to the Death Star? It got blown up. And so if he gets knocked out or stopped or just beat on Saturday, I expect that we will see some Conor McGregor Death Star memes popping up after the fight. And you know what? He kind of brought that on himself. So we'll see what happens, but not a good comparison. Probably worse than Rocky, because at least Rocky just lost, right? The UFC signed a deal to brand their fight kits, uniforms, whatever you want to call them. And that deal was with Crypto.com. And that deal was worth $175 million spread over 10 years. And I kind of did, if you break that down, so it's $1.75 million each year. And if you just wanted to do a quick back of the envelope increase on pay, if the fighters got half of that, which every other sporting major league sport does because of their collective bargaining agreements, they get 50% of the revenue or around 50%. If you divide that out, and you would be able to increase, and this is based on 600 fighters on the roster, you would be able to give every fighter on the roster a base increase of a little more than $14,000 per year. So just a little something there, excuse me, that gets missed in this story. Everybody's real happy about the whole thing, it seems, but no one's really looking at it as what it is. It's $175 million that's going directly to the UFC, and zero of it is going to the fighters. Now Dana White is going to say, well, the fighters have an opportunity to strike their own deals with Crypto.com, but why would the organization give an individual fighter money when it's already got its logo and name on every fighter's fight kit on fight night? It more than likely would not do that. And so Sure, the opportunity's there. The opportunity's there, like the opportunity's there for me to become the president of the United States. It could happen. The chances are, you know, billions to one against, but, you know, it could happen. So White stretching reality here a little bit for his own good and to make himself look like, well, the opportunity is there. It's not really there. And if it is there, it's not there to the tune of millions of dollars for an individual fighter. It'll be there to the tune of hundreds of dollars to an individual fighter. Did I say 1.75 million back there per year? It's 17.5 million. I just realized that and something came out wrong. Anyway, and so I think what it was been recorded is it's the biggest partnership, which we really know is just another word for sponsorship deal in the history of the UFC. And this is another reason. Now, this one, just because of the size and the press it's getting, is the most glaring. But why don't the fighters just step up and organize, or at least demand, you know, to get some of that. Get that demand out there in the media. Get that demand out there in the press and say, look, you are doing nothing for this, and we are out there, you know, putting our lives on the line and our futures on the line, and you're collecting $175 million off our backs. Why can't we get half of that? And this is just one deal. I'm going to try and break this down a little better. I'm going to try and dig up as much as I can on these deals and put something together and, you know, give a better look at this, because this isn't the only deal that's coming down the pike. It's the biggest, but it's not the only one. And so the fighters are really getting screwed here, and the UFC is not going to share that money unless they're forced to. Could the partners force the UFC's hand? Sure. Are they gonna? No, because that's just a headache for them. They're going to give the money to the UFC and get what they get. And the UFC, if the check cashes, will sign a deal with anyone. We know that. We've seen that. And so this is another reason for the fighters to organize. They really, really need to think about this, because this is just the first big, big, big deal. And it's crypto.com, so don't think there's not bigger deals on the horizon. And even if there aren't, so what? You organize and you get a piece of that cash. You get 50-50 of that revenue. Right now, not even close to that. But again, someone's got to step up and say, nope, we're going to hold out for our piece of the pie. Probably not going to happen, but, you know, I would like to think it could happen, but it's probably not going to happen. The Greg Hardy experiment rolls on. He's fighting Tai Tuivasa in a heavyweight bout on the main card of UFC 264. And it's just tiring to put up with this Greg Hardy BS. And I'm sure that Tai Tuivasa, outside of Conor McGregor, might have the most fans coming into UFC 264 in the hopes that he starches Greg Hardy. And those hopes probably kicked up a notch after Hardy's interview, which I will get to in a second. But I'm going to bet there's probably folks out there that are going to be, if Tuivasa gets a violent finish of Hardy, which is possible because these are two big boys swinging bungalows, if Tuivasa gets that finish, and then I would not be surprised if we saw a bunch of shoeys being done on social media, giving some props to Tai Tuivasa for starching Greg Hardy. So, like I said, I think Tuivasa will have a lot more fans out there than he normally will. And here's one of the reasons, because this is what Greg Hardy had to say at UFC 264 interview, speaking about Derek Lewis. He's an ex-con that doesn't know when to shut up. I'm going to put him down when I need to. Of course, timing is everything. I'm still not there yet. I'm willing to admit he's the better man right now, but he's still a fatty. That guy, he's the kind of guy who waits until the third round, plays possum, and then throws a bunch of haymakers, bro. That's MMA to you? And yeah, Derek Lewis is a former ex-convict. He did his time, and he, from everything we see, from everything we hear, he has not slipped back into that life. He's a MMA fighter. He's, you know, investing in his community, from what I understand. He's got some businesses in the Houston area, and he's using his money to make money. And it seems like he's turned himself around. He is not denied that he committed those crimes. He has not said that he didn't do time. He did. And he's moved on. And by all appearances, he's moved on in a positive way. Can we say the same about Greg Hardy? But before you answer that, let me read this these following quotes. "I'm not a villain. I'm well-spoken. I'm pretty. I eat well. I have kids. I'm a great father. I'm a great citizen. I'm an awesome American. I'm a Republican guy. I vote. What kind of villain would I be? I've never been convicted of anything that they said I was. Dude, I'm a regular run-of-the-mill guy that's learning on the way up, taking responsibility for his mess-ups and taking over. If I bowed down to this villainous, cowardice stigma, dogma that they try to put on me, I wouldn't be a prince. Now, would I? I'd be a peasant. I'm a future king. Why would I bow down?" No one's saying that Greg Hardy has to bow down. People are saying that maybe he should stop lying here. So we'll go by this. He's never been convicted of anything that they said. He was convicted by a judge because he had means to get that conviction reversed. And the conviction was reversed because he went to a jury trial, and then the victim of the crime did not show up for the trial. That's why the conviction was dropped and reversed, not because he was innocent, but because the person stopped cooperating. So there was talk that there was a payoff. I don't know if that's true or not, but we've heard that's been thrown out there in stories since this went down. But yes, 100%, Greg Hardy was convicted by a judge. The conviction was reversed on appeal when the victim stopped cooperating or wouldn't cooperate in the jury trial. That does not say innocence. That just says we couldn't get the person to cooperate. So 100% convicted. Taking responsibility for his mess ups. Never apologized for anything that he reportedly did. Never said he was wrong. The only thing that he seemed to say was that he was sorry that it got, you know, taken to court and that he was charged with these things. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, he was also hit with a cocaine charge after the violence charges. But come on now. Greg Hardy, is he a villain? I would consider him a villain. I would consider him, at the very least, a bad person. He's a liar, as he lies here. He is a ex-convict because he was convicted. Did he do time? No, but that doesn't mean he wasn't convicted, because he was. Did he take responsibilities for his mess-ups? No, not one bit. Never has. He's still denying that he was convicted, so obviously he's not taking responsibility. And, yeah. So I'm going to say here again, I'm betting Tai Tuivasa is going to have a lot more fans at UFC 264 than he normally does. UFC pay has come up again. And this was an interview with Dana White, and here's what he had to say. "The reality is, anybody who's been critical of the fighters themselves don't know anything anyway. They don't actually know what these guys are making, and the fighters don't ever come out and tell you. There's no gag order on any of these guys. These guys can come out anytime and tell you what they're making. I have no problem with that, but they don't, do they? No, they do not. So it's a sort of catch-22. Here's the thing. That's not true. If you looked at the fighter contract, it says that the fighters cannot discuss their pay with anyone. And so anyone means they can't release their pay. And also, we got a pretty good idea of what fighters are making because of the court, the antitrust case, and the information that was put forth in that. So we kind of know what this stuff is. White keeps saying that we don't, but we do. And if we don't know 100%, we know enough that unless there's a, you know, 90% margin of error in these numbers that we've seen, we have a pretty damn good idea on what fighters are making. And it's not nearly what they should be making from the revenue split. Revenue split is still, you know, almost 80% or more to the UFC and the scraps to the fighters. So, yeah, we know. Dana White might think we don't know, but we know, and he can keep denying it, But that isn't going to make the lie that he keeps telling the truth. It just isn't. Same with the Greg Hardy thing before. You can repeat a lie endlessly. It doesn't make it any more true. And here's another thing he said. Fighter pay has continually gone up every year since we owned the business. Obviously, there's been tons more opportunities with the outfitting policy. Some of the sponsors that we brought in that spend tons of money with the fighters, too. There's a lot of opportunity here for the fighters. And listen, there's never going to be a guy who comes out and says, yeah, they're paying me too much. They're overpaying me and all the guys that are champions sharing the pay-per-view revenue. So I looked at a quick glance at this before I recorded, and not true. Fighter pay has continually gone up every year since we owned the business. UFC starting pay, base pay, minimum pay, whatever you want to call it, first fight pay, 2018, $12,000. 2019, $12,000. 2020, $12,000. And for the most part now, no one else is disclosing the pay because the UFC kind of leaned on them and told them that was trade secret, which it's not. But they convinced Florida that it was, and also convinced Nevada that they shouldn't release pay. So the only state that's really going to do it freely right now is California. And I don't think there's anything scheduled UFC-wise in California for a while. But we do know for 2018, 2019, and 2020, the low pay, the base pay, the starting pay fighters just coming in is $12,000 a fight. You can double that with a win, but it's still $12,000 if you lose. So, no, pay has not gone up every year. So, another lie that's going to obviously probably get repeated more and more. And White showing that he's, you know, very unaware of everything. Added, listen, if you don't like it, go start your own MMA league and pay him whatever you want to pay him. This is mine, and this is the way we're doing it. Well, Dana White doesn't own the UFC. Dana White is the UFC president, and Dana White not only has bosses at Endeavor, he also has bosses at in the stockholders. So now the stockholders are going to, if they want, can pressure Endeavor, and then Endeavor can get rid of White. Barring some kind of insane contract that says he cannot be fired, which I would find hard to believe, White serves at the will of the stockholders and also at the will of his bosses at Endeavor. This is not his anymore. Not that it ever was his. It was always the Fertitta brothers first, and then some other investors, and then White. Did he have a piece of it? Sure. But that piece is gone, and he's just an employee now. Just an employee who has bosses, just an employee who has to answer to the stockholders. So Dana White needs to change the this is mine attitude and, you know, act right. And this is, you know, what do you think if you're a UFC fighter and this is the boss throwing his weight around, talking down to everyone and pretty much giving them, it's my way or the highway. You know, that's why fighters get mad. That's why fighters resist doing whatever White wants, because they know all the money that the UFC is getting and White's getting and how much they're not getting. And all these fans out here who are, you know, love Dana White, I guarantee you, if they had a boss like Dana White, they would detest him, because what he says, this is mine and this is the way we're doing it, is a detestable thing to say. It's a detestable way to act. No one likes a boss like that. They might not say it to your face because they know you're a vindictive prick, but behind your back, I can guarantee you they're talking all that shit. And when you say stupid things like this, you kind of deserve that. So we'll see what happens here, but don't let Dana White convince you that he is the last word in the UFC. He's not. UFC 264 main event, Conor McGregor, Dustin Poirier. Dana White spoke about Conor McGregor, and this is what he had to say in the lead up to the fight. He'll go down as one of the greatest of all time, to have lost the belt, gone through the things that have happened to him personally and professionally, then to come back again, beat the number one contender who just beat him, and then fight for the title and win. So yeah, okay, I'm going to say no to greatest of all time. So I kind of consider the greatest of all time will have a decent run at the top of the game, and not just financially or fan-wise, but as in an athlete at the top of the game. Khabib Nurmagomedov, John Jones, Anderson Silva, George St. Pierre. These are all names that come to mind when you discuss the greatest of all time. And what do they have that Conor McGregor doesn't have? Multiple title defenses. Conor McGregor has not defended a title in his career. He's won them in the UFC, but he's never defended them. He was stripped of both the lightweight and the featherweight title because he did not defend them. In his next attempt to get the title, he got choked out by Khabib Nurmagomedov. In a fight that Nate Diaz took on super short notice, he choked out Conor McGregor. Dustin Poirier knocked out Conor McGregor. So these are things that prevent me from putting him at the top of the list, or even near the top of the list of the greatest of all time. He's not there. Has he done a ton for the sport? Sure, he's done a ton for himself. Most of the things that Conor McGregor have done have been for Conor McGregor. He's not, even in that way, he's not one of the greatest of all time. He's not supported the sport. He's not, some people will try and make you believe that McGregor's pay has increased the pay of every fighter, but that has not happened. And other fighters who are being honest have said that. And anyone that says that has no proof of that because it hasn't happened. If you look at the pay is still kind of the same. New fighters are still making 12 grand, 2018, 19, 20. So don't tell me that everyone's pay has gone up because of Conor McGregor. It has not. And he's just not in that conversation. He's not. He's done a ton of things, but he's never defended a title. He's got pretty one-sided losses to Diaz, Khabib, and Poirier here in the recent fight. So even if he wins against Poirier, I don't think that puts him in there. If he beats Oliveira, I still don't think that puts him in there. If he beats Oliveira and then goes on to defend the title, all right, I'll start considering it. But right now, he's a good fighter. Sometimes he was a great fighter who did a lot for himself, made a great name for himself, and made a lot of money for himself. But as a competitor, he's not in the class of a John Jones, a George St. Pierre, and Anderson Silva. Any of the Khabib, he's not in that class. He's not in that big group, that first group. He's just not. Even Ronda Rousey, I think, did more for the sport and could be considered one of the greatest of all time before McGregor. Amanda Nunes, Chris Cyborg, Fedor, Randy Couture. These folks are all in that conversation. Right now, Conor McGregor is not. Could he be? He could be, but it's going to take a long time, and I don't think he has that kind of time in him, nor do I think he has that kind of time that he wants to invest in becoming the greatest of all time. He'll make the most money of all time, but GOAT? Now you'd be hard-pressed to put him even in that conversation. Finish up here on something Sean O'Malley said. Sean O'Malley said, this was a quote, and it kind of left me a little cold here. What does Chael Sonnen say? Fight the worst guy on the highest spot on the card. I literally get paid the same amount if I fought Khabib and if I fight Chris, the guy he's fighting at UFC 264, who came in as a last-minute replacement. I'm a businessman that's good at fighting. I make money from fighting. Now, let me talk about this a little bit. Chael Sonnen was a notorious trash talker. And what I took away from that was insults to his opponents. He wanted to try to make his opponents feel like they weren't good, that they weren't worthy. And this was just a dig at them to say, all right, I might be fighting at the top of the card, but I'm fighting the crappy guy at the top of the card. But let's look at these crappy guys that allegedly, quote unquote, crappy guys that worst guys on the card that Chael Sonnen fought. And this starts in 2009. Yushin Okami, Nate Marquardt, Anderson Silva, Brian Stann, Michael Bisping, Anderson Silva, John Jones, Mauricio Hua, and Rashad Evans. Those are the fights Chael Sonnen took between 2009 and 2017 in the UFC. I'm sorry, 2013 in the UFC. Those are not the worst guys on the card. Those are some of the best guys that ever fought in the UFC. And Chael being Chael trying to get inside his opponent's head, said, I'm going to fight the worst guys and the highest part in the card. And those were the guys, all ranked, all, you know, almost all of them champions, former champions, future champions somewhere. You can't say that about the fighter Sean O'Malley is meeting right now. So O'Malley took Sonnen's words here and took them in literal fashion, when I'd be hard-pressed to believe that Sonnen really meant these as any other way than to get under the skin of those guys, of those, you know, superstars. Sean O'Malley's not fighting superstars. So he can say what he wants, but he's still fighting unranked fighters who the UFC's handpicking for him to win and make a name for himself. That's all that is. So come on now, Sean O'Malley. You know, you should know better than to believe what Chael Sonnen said here about those guys. And on that note, I'm going to call it a night. Like I said, I will be back probably again tomorrow with some more stuff. Things have really picked up, so I'm going to try and stay on this as much as I can. And as long as I can fill a big chunk of time, 20 minutes or so, I'll do this as much as I need to. So, and I'll be back. And until then, everyone, stay safe.